That is the quintessential important thing. Let everything else fall apart, but make sure you stay in direct contact with Jesus. Okay. How many of you are like me, is that for a long time in my Christian life, I thought getting in direct contact with Jesus came out of Psalm 100. It says, enter into His gates with thanksgiving and into His courts with praise. And end of story. That was all that was necessary, which led me to stay in a spot where if the singing was good, then I would be in direct contact with Jesus. And if the singing wasn't good, oh well, there's always next Sunday. We can try again. Okay? Well, what David said there is true. But remember the last time I spoke about truth? Is that there is more to truth than just being true. Remember that there is not only truth, but there's the whole truth, and there's nothing but the truth. And Psalm 100 is true, but it's not the whole truth. It's not the whole truth about entering into the presence of the Lord. I have been talking to you out of Hebrews chapter 10, because I think the writer of Hebrews is actually giving us some real clear step-by-step teaching on how to get into and stay in contact with Jesus. So, Elisha, could you give me the first slide? There, remember Rocky's thing there some weeks ago? We talked about that Jesus probably gave the best, at least for me, the best of what edification really is. It's when a branch is in direct, continuous, and clean contact. And I just want you to keep that in mind as we talk, because now I'm going to go on to the next one, and so that's it. And it says Romans 10 there, and I'm sorry, it's Hebrews 10:19. It says this, having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter in to the holy place. Now, holy place is code for Hebrews. You get around Hebrews, and holy place is code for the presence of Jesus. That's what the holy place is. What's in the holy place? God is in the holy place. So if you're going to enter into the holy place, there's one word there that I think is important for us to get, and we always overlook it. That's the little word having at the very beginning. Having, therefore, brethren. We slide over that in English. In the original Greek text, that word means to possess the ability. And I want to encourage you this morning that, brethren, you have the ability to enter into the holy place. And the writer here says, brethren, you have the ability to enter into the holy place. And I think that there's an overwhelmingness that's on the negative side. It's not I'm overwhelmed with your presence. It's an overwhelmed with the fact that I just don't think I can do this. And it's kind of like the spies that went into the promised land. They went in there and went, ho, there's some big guys in there. And they had a sense of, we don't have the ability to do this. We can't do this. And yet, as with Caleb and Joshua, the writer of Hebrews is saying, we are well able to do this. We can enter in. It's not too hard. These guys are not too scary. These mountains that have to be dealt with, I want them. I want one of those mountains myself. So the first thing in here is just the housekeeping thing of that we do possess the ability. All right? There's an instruction manual here, and we need to follow it. And one of those things is that there's more to entering in than just praise and thanksgiving. There is more to it than that. Next thing that I want to point out is in verse 22 of Hebrews 10. It says, draw near. It says, let us draw near. And that is what's called a continuative clause. What that means is that it means that we don't simply draw near and then poop out. Continuative clause means let us draw near and keep on drawing near. Let us draw near and keep on drawing near. There has been some ideas floating around that says that, well, I entered in once and that's good enough for me, by golly. No. That is not the instructions of the writer here. The instructions is let us draw near and keep on drawing near. And somebody brought up this week, what if you didn't keep on drawing near, but you simply stayed in there? And I thought that was really a good thought. What if you didn't draw near and then leave and then come back and draw near again and then leave and then draw back and forth? Remember the picture I just showed you? What if you took that branch that was directly connected to the trunk and you took it out every once in a while? Oh, and then you put it back in. And then you took it out again because you had to go to work. Oh, and then you put it back in again because it's Tuesday night fellowship. Oh, and then you took it out again because the relatives came. And what do you expect to get from a branch like that? Are you going to get fruit? No. At the very best, I mean, if it was the best conditions, you would get this festering, big running joint there, trying to survive. And that's what I just got this mental image of lots of Christians doing that. There's just this festering. They got the infection. There's problems. Everything is an issue. And because there's this pulling out and putting back in, pulling out. And I see in this place where the writer is saying, let us continue. Remember what Jesus said about the vine? He said, abide in me. That means get in and stay in. Whether you go to work, Vanessa, she stayed in. I mean, how easy was that? You know, we sing this song, I'm overwhelmed. How overwhelmed were you? But you were staying in. I just appreciate that so much. She hung in there with Jesus, and there was something really precious about what she was doing there. Go ahead.
Just a comment. Staying in with Jesus is not the same as coming to church on Sunday morning.
Ooh.
So, I mean, it's not like you feel guilty because you didn't make it to church. And it's,
yeah.
It's staying in Jesus is something.
Yes. Remember, I never said. Thank you. Very good point. Don't need to say more about that. Very important there is that we do not have this idea that the presence of God means church. Going to church. All right. So, abide in me is what Jesus said. And the writer of Hebrews in verse 22 is saying the same thing. Get in and stay in. How do you do that? And let's go on. We talked, the last time I was up here, I talked and you guys commented on the first one of the four things that you need to bring with you when you enter into the holy place. And that was Okay, a true heart. And I did this late at night, and I think I got it a little mixed up. The first thing in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 22 says, "Let us draw near with a true heart." And I talked about a true heart. And for the most part, we got to the point where we said that what's true is not just the truth, it's the whole truth. And that's a problem for us. And nothing but the truth. And I want to dig in a little bit more to that. Actually, I'd love to move on to the next one, but this is really a personal one for me, and I want to share some of my journey along the way. True heart, first of all, I want to tell you what I am not talking about. I am not talking about doctrinal correctness when I say true. Enter in with a true heart. And I want to just kind of tamp that down and say, don't interpret having a true heart with being loyal to a train or a stream of doctrine. You can have that kind of heart. You can have that kind of commitment, is what I should say. You have that loyalty to a doctrinal stance and not have a true heart. After all, look at the scribes, doctors, and Pharisees. Okay? They were absolutely the specialists on doctrinal correctness. And yet Jesus, study this, how much of the time he was pointing out how false their heart was. And yet they were absolutely lined up correct in their doctrine. So don't think that the true heart that the writer of Hebrews is saying is you can enter in only if your doctrine is correct. No. We're not talking about that. Am I talking about careless doctrine? I love to get doctrine right. But that is not what brings me into the presence of Christ. Okay? Let me give you another definition of true. True, very bottom of the screen there, it says true is the reality behind the outward appearance. And that is something that has been pursuing me for some time, and I'll give you more about that. But let me tell you one more thing that I am not talking about. As soon as I say, yay, the reality behind the appearance, I love the truth. I love to see through other people's masks. I love to dig in and find out what's really going on with them. In fact, I've got a gift. And I call it discernment. Right? I am not talking about you digging out the reality behind everybody else's appearances. This is between you and God. What it's saying here is it's saying you enter in with a true heart. It's not saying you get close to Jesus by finding out how everybody else is doing. Right? So these are some things that I just need to maintain. It's housekeeping. Cleaning up some of the things that you could trip over in the house. Jesus said, He said, I came so that those that see would become blind. And you were going, whoa, wait a minute. No, I thought he was the guy that made people see. No. He said, I came that those that see would become blind. If you have a talent for seeing everybody else's faults, you know what your prayer needs to be? Make me blind. Make me blind. Because that's part of the ministry of Christ in you. Paul doesn't pray for his saints for arthritis and whether they get a job or not. You know what he prays for? The things that can't be gotten any other way except through prayer. And in Philippians, he says, you know what I'm praying for you guys? That you would approve the things that are excellent. Wow, and I saw that. I said, whoa, am I ever wacky? I'm not focusing with Paul at all, because I am focused on disapproving the things that aren't so excellent. See? And you can do that all on your own, but to be able to come to the point where you approve the things that are excellent, you need the help of God. You're not going to do that on your own. It's a work of God. In 2 Thessalonians, you can go on to the next slide, Elijah. 2 Thessalonians, there's something here that I noticed here. It's an obscure little passage. It's not one you learned in Sunday school. It's not one that you would hear about, except when people are talking about the end times. But I don't want to talk about the end times. I want to talk about the true heart. Here's what it says. It's talking, the background to this is that it's talking about the Antichrist deceiving the whole world. And when they're deceived, they're going to perish. But he says this phrase in here, which is the thing that stopped me and arrested me in here, is that he's going to do that with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth. Wow, I looked at that and I went, who could possibly know what that means? Just so much garbledy gook. It's just, you know, you could as well be speaking in tongues as to the understandableness of that phrase until you start digging. You know, and there are good digging tools. And I really love the good digging tools. Started looking at this and I found out the deceivableness, according to the Greek word that is actually used, that is translated deceivableness, means words and deeds designed to give a false impression. That's what deceivableness means. I'm going through here and it says, and the Antichrist is going to deceive them with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, and the little word in comes up. What we think when we think about the coming of the Antichrist is that he is going to come and deceivableness is going to be in the Antichrist. Well, guess what where does Paul say the deceivableness is? In the Antichrist? No, it says the deceivableness is going to be in them that perish. It's going to be in people. Deceivableness is this desire to use words and deeds in such a way that it creates a false impression of who you are. Now, is the Antichrist going to do that? Yep. Does Satan do that? Yep. But the reason why people are going to perish is not because the Antichrist is so deceitful and the devil is so deceitful. It's going to be because the deceitfulness is in us. The deceitfulness, or this urge, this yearning, this hunger, this bent toward words and deeds to create a persona for ourselves that's deceitful. It's not really who we are. And that is something that's in every person. It's part of the flesh. Okay? And deceivableness in them that perish has been going on since Adam and Eve. He said, well, we hid ourselves. Why? Because we were ashamed of ourselves. Who told you? Who told you that? God says, I didn't tell you that. Who told you that? And that's a good question for each one of us to dig into. Who told you that the way you are, the way God sees you, is something that you should be ashamed of? So the deceivableness is in us. And that is, remember Jesus said, my enemy comes and he finds nothing in me? Our enemy comes and what does he find? He finds this need to create words and deeds designed to give a false impression. He finds that need within us. And this is what's digging down into the heart of truth for me, especially. Now, the next part is, it says, why do they perish? Why is this thing going to happen? Because they received not the love of the truth. This phrase, the love of the truth, grabbed me. And it wasn't, I wasn't overwhelmed with joy over this. The love of the truth. Received is the word for welcomed or embrace. Welcome and embrace. And this had great meaning for me because I have been realizing over the only in the last, I don't know, 3 years maybe. I've been a Christian a long, long time. But maybe in the last 3 years, it has become clear to me, slowly, that I have not always been a lover of the truth. I have been one of those that did not welcome the love of the truth. I could go into my testimony and all that stuff, but that's not what's important now. Through all the things of life, which every one of us goes through, the ups and downs, the beat downs and the high points and all that, we come to certain conclusions. And I concluded for myself that the truth needed a little help. The truth was shabby. The truth was so unvarnished. The truth was just downright embarrassing and humiliating. And I chose to reject and not welcome the love of the truth. I didn't love it. I certainly didn't love it. I avoided it. I despised the truth. The truth needed help. And guess I was just the right guy to do it. I was just the right guy to take that hog and put lipstick on it, a little foo-foo dress, and earrings in those big old, And that the oinking there was really beautiful music, and I was a specialist, and many are, and that's the deceivableness that is in us, is that we get really good at this to the point where we don't even know who we are anymore, and. So that deceivableness, and I did not welcome the love of the truth. Guess what? In God's great mercy and providence, I met a young woman, fell in love with her, and married a woman who loved the truth. She still loves the truth. And you get somebody who thinks the truth is just humiliating, and it's somebody who just says, not the truth, anything but the, get away. It's just too undignified. The truth is so undignified, I just don't like it. Because I'm a little guy, and I need to protect my dignity as much as I possibly can. And I marry somebody who loves the truth. Not only that, but the whole truth. And nothing but the truth. So help me, God. And I just go through life going, in my prayer time, going, how come you're always on her side? Can't I be right just once? Oh, and the truth is, and she is constantly telling the truth. She's constantly living the truth. And I am so humiliated. You didn't have to tell them that. Well, it's the truth. I know, but you did you have to? Ah! You married anybody like that? Yeah, you're married to a person who despises and has a great distaste for the truth, and they're married to somebody who's absolutely dedicated to the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And it just goes on and on all the time, every day. Hallelujah.
Harry?
Yeah?
Can I just say something? While you're talking about the love of the truth, I'm sitting here thinking about how some Christians get all their doctrine or all their inspiration from Christian music, contemporary Christian music, and that's a lot of times, you know, those scriptures are, and there's a lot of scripture in these, but they're cherry picked, you know.
Cherry picked.
Even the, you know, even the worship that we had this morning, you know, without the word. If you're getting all your doctrine, all your food from Christian music, you don't have the nutrition that you need.
Very good. Very good point.
It's something that I know in my heart because there's just a real difference between when I sit down to read the scripture and how God talks to me there.
Oh yeah.
Compared to, you know, and I'm not saying that Christian music is wrong. It's just that it's not enough.
Yeah, and this is it's the truth, but it's not the whole truth.
Right.
See, and this is the thing that always needled and has, and I'm still under construction on this thing, because I've had so much of a need to look better, smarter, especially more dignified. I concluded that I was going to develop words and deeds designed to present myself as more dignified than I really was. And I have to admit, I learned that from my dad. And I learned that from my grandpa. See? And there was things that were really damaging because they were dedicated to continuing an image that they were stronger, smarter, wiser. They never made mistakes. And they wouldn't admit it to their children? You know, shoot me right now. Never. And then the one next, I am sorry, that would kill them. That would have killed them. Because what it was, it would be words and deeds that start to tear down that false impression. And there's one thing that you never want to do, is that. So, I created and was dedicated to a false dignity. And I married somebody, hallelujah, that was going to help me with that. And I did not appreciate it at all. Oh, my goodness sakes. The one thing I noticed about Jesus as I started thinking about the love of the truth and what the love of the truth really was, it was the reality behind the opinion. You know what was so offensive to so many about Jesus? I don't know if you ever read, put this pair of glasses on, is in this whole thing of truth being the reality behind the appearance, the thing that the disciples really they were just so humiliated and embarrassed. You could just see them writhing as Jesus says to the woman, I don't condemn you either. you know. Ah! And at the woman at the well, what are you talking to her for? If you're going to build a reputation, these are the things that are going to kill it. Right here. Another one here is that the disciples just so humiliated because Jesus said, yeah, I'll come and eat with you. Yeah, yeah. And they were sinners. And they were publicans. And they had to kind of be drug along in this thing. And it was just so undignified. It just didn't present the appearance of a Messiah, of a political leader that was going to set things in their certain way. And then you got Peter. Have you ever imagined? I got a good imagination. Can you imagine how Peter squirmed when Jesus knelt down and said, "I'm going to wash your feet." I mean, it could have been hydrochloric acid in that basin as far as he was going, because it destroyed the false impression that he was hoping that Jesus would maintain. And Jesus just had, and I think Satan hates Jesus, he hates God, because God so has such disregard for his own dignity. He just said, God, you know, I tell you, of all the people who don't think about themselves, I think God is the one who doesn't think about himself, doesn't think about how he's coming off, doesn't check with the vibes out there to see how this is playing with the crowd, things like that. God just, I think he just is not that way at all. And I think that's something that I found unique about Jesus. So, next slide, please. What do you really like beneath the surface? And here's what I found on my journey. Is I came to the point where I realized that false dignity was yucky. That it was not pleasing to God, and that God had been after me all of my life to rip the mask of false dignity. I'm the man of the house. And all the imaginations that I had about false dignity, he started helping to peel off my mask, and guess what? My wife was the instrument so many times along the way for this. But here's what I found, brothers and sisters. It's kind of like I'm one of those spies that went in and I'm reporting back what I found. Here's what I found, is that once I said, no more false impression of dignity. Smartness, coolness. I was in love with coolness. I could never be as cool as I wanted to be, but I tried hard to be cool. And when I realized that God wasn't cool. How many of you are still grappling with this thing? If I follow Jesus, he's just not cool. I mean, he just disregards his own dignity. He's just so embarrassing. When I realized that I was a rejecter of the truth, I started to allow that mask to go. Lo and behold, does anybody know? Have you been into the holy place and found out what happens next? Is that you find out that your pendulum swing over to another bunch of words and deeds to create a false impression, and that one's the mask that says, "I ain't faking it anymore. I'm gonna let it all hang out." Say what I think when I want to. I'm not laughing at their jokes anymore. I've got the truth. And I'm going to just bleh. Only to realize that when I pulled this mask off of false dignity, lo and behold, underneath that was false humility. False humility. And I had only traded one set of words and deeds to deceive for another set of words and deeds to deceive. I had just said, oh, I'm going to be humble now. Okay. So I could go on here, but what will happen is that you finally deal with the giant in the land called false humility. You take that mask off and lo and behold, what do you find underneath that? You find the mask of, I'm just going to be good. You tear that mask off and you got another one underneath that. And you've come to the realization of what Jeremiah realized. Jeremiah was one of those guys that went in, and guess what he found in there? He found that his heart was deceitfully wicked above all things. And that he was not going to figure it out. He was not going to figure it out. So what's a poor Norwegian supposed to do when he pulls off these masks and there's only another mask under that? And then he pulls that mask off and there's just another mask under that. And there's no end to the deceitfulness of the human heart. I'm glad you asked. Here we go. John 13:17, 16:13. Jesus is describing somebody who's coming. It's kind of when I started realizing this, I realized there's this old Cat Stevens. No, it wasn't Cat Stevens. It was somebody else that had the old song. And along came Jones. You know, they were tied to the railroad tracks, and there was no way out. And then there was some other disaster, and there was no way out. And then along came Jones. Well, this is what I thought of when Jesus says, "Hey, you're stuck." There is no end to the depths of your need to be somebody other than you are. And he says, don't worry, I'm going to send somebody to you. And he's going to help you. And he's called the Spirit of Truth. I looked at this a little bit because I always like tinkering with the words. I found out that in some of the manuscripts, the oldest manuscripts, it doesn't say Spirit of Truth. Do you know what it says? It says the Truth Spirit. I'm going to send to you the Truth Spirit. Yeah, I liked it. I thought that was great. The Spirit of God that we have within us, guess what? He's the Truth Spirit. And He's going to guide us into all truth. Because there's no way you're going to be able to guide yourself into any truth, much less all truth. So that's the thing that I'm going to leave you with today. There's more to this, and it comes into the second part of Hebrews 10:22, is that how and what is the Spirit going to guide you into? But the thing that I want to point out is I want to bring your memory way back as, I don't know, 9 months or so ago. Remember when I talked about the fact that the disciples could not see Jesus as He really was as long as they had an attitude that said, my opinion is just as good as your opinion. Remember that? We went through and it had to do with the way they were questioning Jesus. They were always questioning. There was an inquisition going on. And they actually enjoyed these times when the Pharisees would take Jesus to task because you never find the disciples coming to Jesus' defense and saying, hey, wait a minute. He's the truth. You're a bunch of baloney. No, they were in the middle going, oh, goody. And as long as they had an attitude in their heart that said, my opinion about the truth is just as good as your opinion, Jesus, and I question you not to find out what the truth is, but I question you to find out if your truth lines up with my truth. Okay? And that cut off their ability to see. As soon as there was a shift within them that said, hey, your opinion of who I am is better than my opinion of who I am. There was immediate progress made. But they spent down to the last hour or so of their time with Jesus with this wall between them of their attitude that says, my reality is just as good as your reality. See? And this is the world that we live in today. And it is the world that we've always lived in since the beginning, since the garden, is this thing that says that my reality, and of course the serpent said, not God's reality, I don't know, there's an alternative. See, there's an alternative here. And as soon as the disciples got to that place, by grace and through just a lot of things that happened, they got to the point where they finally started saying, I really want to know what your opinion of me is. I am done with trying to figure out who I am. I'm done with trying to find the reality behind the outward appearance, because it seems like my heart can come up with more masks than I could ever possibly handle. And so the Spirit of Truth has come, and He's going to guide us into all truth. And Bob was ahead of me in this, is guess what? One of the main tools that the Spirit is going to use to guide us into who we really are, God's view of who we really are, so that we can enter in with a true heart. He's going to use the Scriptures. He's way ahead of me on that. He anticipated that. That was great. He's going to use the Scriptures because that's where the Spirit is going to show us what God really thinks about us.